Welcome to the online dental mentoring service, where Dr. Derry Rogers and Associate Professor Michael Stubbs present clinical overviews and speak to dental leaders on the developing areas of modern day practice to assist you to develop and grow yours. Visit onlinedentalmentoring.com for more podcasts and training videos, all available free to our subscribers. We hope you enjoy today's show. So welcome back to the Online Dental Mentoring Podcast with your host, Dr. Derry Rogers and Associate Professor Michael Stubbs. Michael, I wonder whether you can share with our audience some simple tips when taking a clinical history from a patient in relation to jaw problems or pain issues.
Yeah, sure, Derry. As you know, the best diagnosis starts with the best clinical history. So these are some of the questions I often ask patients, and it gives you a very good insight just into the functionality, if you like, of the temporomandibular joints and the masticatory muscle complex. First question I always ask is, when you chew your food, does your jaw get sore or tired? Now, if somebody says their jaw tires, the first thing you should be thinking about, it's muscular. There's a muscular element to the problem. Second question I always ask is, do you awaken in the morning with a stiff or sore jaw? Again, if a patient has symptoms such as tightness, pain, or some discomfort in the morning, it is very suggestive that that patient is experiencing what we would call bruxism at night. And as we know, bruxism doesn't always occur every night, but it certainly is something that we recognise it does happen. And I think, interestingly enough, with the bruxism reality, we understand that it is an aggravating factor, certainly for TMD, temporomandibular disorders. Third question I always ask is, and it may sound a little bit obscure, but do you experience any earache or blocked ear? Because what's interesting is often patients will experience blocked ear, a sense of reduced sense of hearing or earache, and they may say to you, well, as a matter of fact, I do. I've been to my doctor several times. I've even seen an ear, nose and throat surgeon, and they tell me my ears are normal, but my ears are blocked. Palpate the TMJ. Because if the TMJ is painful to palpation, it's usually suggestive that the ear symptoms are related to that. And in fact, about 90% of patients who have pain in their TMJ experience some form of ear symptom. Fourth question I ask, obviously, is does their mandible lock or do they have a sense of reduced or restriction in mouth opening? So we know, for example, some patients will know that they say, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I feel like I can't open like I used to. When I'm yawning, it particularly, it's very uncomfortable. Or they may actually say something like, well, I've noticed that I have to move my jaw in several positions to open my mouth. Again, the insight is the consideration of what we call internal derangement. That's a structural term which describes the relationship of the condyle and the discs. And I think the final question that I always ask, do they experience headaches? It's interesting because a lot of people will say, well, yeah, it's because I'm dehydrated. But then you ask them, how often do you get headaches? Where do they tend to occur? Especially in the frontotemporal regions is more suggestive of musculoskeletal pain origin rather than anything. And you want to get an idea, for example, do they wake with a headache? Does the headache come on more during the day? Some patients might talk about migraines. And I think the important thing here is a migraine to one person can be a migraine quite different to somebody else. We know that migraine headaches are typically where someone feels nauseated and very sensitive to light or sound, whereas other people term just a chronic daytime headache as a migraine. And so I think these are great ones just to start with anyway, and they certainly give you an appreciation of what's happening in the context of their jaw.
Michael, those are great points. So when you're examining a patient, what would you say are some of the key things you would consider when you're doing a TMJ and a muscle exam?
Well, in my experience, there's a few points here. I think the first one is measuring the mouth opening and lateral excursions of the mandible. So, for example, most colleagues would have either one of those gauges that we use when we used to make dentures and we do the full wax rims. can trim them. What I do is I use a terabyte measure, and it, we know that, for example, on average, 36 to 52 millimeters is the normal mouth opening range. So if you've got somebody that says, my mouth feels really restricted when I open, and they're opening 52 millimeters, I think you either have to say to yourself, is this person either what we call hypermobile, or is it just a perceptual change? The other one is to the lateral excursions. So you can measure how far the mandibular midline, that is to say the space, if you like, or the measuring between the mandibular incisor, central incisor teeth, how it moves in relevance to the midline of the maxillary central incisors, and you can get an idea in millimetres of what that range is. So we deem normal as about 8 to 12 millimetres. Again, the benefit of this brings in some objective data. You can always compare your patients. So, for example, if you have somebody who's opening 34 millimetres on their first visit, and then down the track you've done some splint therapy, they may have had some physiotherapy for their jaw, and you're re-measuring their mouth opening, it's 43 or 44 millimetres, even though the patient may say to you, I don't know if I've really improved with my treatment. You can say, well, first of all, your mouth opening range has improved. Palpate the joints. Most patients, you should be able to palpate the TMJ areas without any pain whatsoever. But again, somebody who might have pain when you palpate, it might be more on one side than the other, so right versus left, or it could be bilateral. And also palpate the masseter and temporalis muscles. Now, when I palpate the masseter muscle, just as a friendly tip, don't just put your fingers immediately on the masseter muscle. We all, of course, know the points of insertion, zygomatic arch relative to the lower body of the mandible and the gonial angle. Start at the chin and start to work your fingers back towards the gonial angle, because as you're doing it, you're creating a gradient, and all of a sudden the patient appreciates when you're pushing near their chin region, there's usually no pain. And as you're working backwards towards the gonial angle, it gives them a sense of, well, actually it is quite sore. And when they open their mouth, have a look at the range and the movement of the chin. So does it deflect to one side or the other? Is there a mid-opening deviation of the mandible, which means the mandible may go left, right, and then again straight opening? It might be an inference as to what we call internal derangement, which means structural changes of the disc and the condylar head. And the tendon of temporalis is a good one too, because I always find patients who tend to brux will usually have pain when you palpate the tendon of temporalis. And also have a look at the occlusion. We often ask our patients to open their mouths, but get them to bite together as well. When a patient talks about reduction in movement, failure of the normal alignment of the mandible, pain in the jaw, have a look to see if there's any unilateral open cross bites and open bites. You may actually notice a change when they're in centric occlusion, which suggests, again, there's structural changes in relevance to the joints.
So, Mike, one of the things I think is important for our listeners to be able to access is some videos of you actually doing these TMJ exam and muscle testing exams. And I encourage our listeners to head to www.onlinedentalmentoring.com to have a look at those. Another thing our listeners, I'm sure, would like to know a little bit more about is how we try to understand TMJ noises. You know, we have clicks, we have clunks, we have pops, we have crepitus. How do you assess them, and what's the relevance of them?
Well, thanks, Derry. I think one of the first things is it's important to say that if the temporomandibular joints make sounds, especially clicking or popping sounds, it does not mean that automatically the patient is destined for some TMJ functional issues. We understand that there have been, and there has been published, a 20-year MRI study which showed follow-up on patients, which actually showed that 93% of patients with the noisy joints actually remained quite stable. Of course, the problem you have is your patient one of the 7% that didn't? So what I do is I evaluate with fingers on the joints, and as they open their mouth, you can detect quite quickly, is it bilateral clicking as they start to open early stage, or is it late stage in opening, or is it in fact they click on both opening and late stage of opening? the sound of the noise is actually important too. Often you'll find patients will describe a clicking sound. Sometimes you can hear it when they move their mandible. But if you hear it like what we would say is eggshell crackling, which is we call crepitus, it's usually suggestive that there's a degenerative change happening, in particular osteoarthrosis. And, you know, sometimes too, just doing a simple OPG radiograph or what we call transcranial view. So that's where you actually do a visual or have a visualization by radiology of the patient, both in centric occlusion and when they open their mouth. And it can give you some insight to see if there's any osteophytes, bony spurs. Is there any irregularity in the outline of the cortical bone of those condyles, suggestive of osteoarthritis? And I think even more importantly, as a basic imaging, it gives you some sense of what is the anatomy like. Now, some of you listening to this might be lucky enough to either have a CBCT or, in fact, you might even refer your patient off for a CBCT. Of course, they're far more detailed. But again, it's recognizing that imaging is useful as a tool when you're assessing your patient. But to make a diagnosis of TMD, temporomandibular disorder, it's actually primarily based on clinical history and the clinical presentation.
Michael, would you use a stethoscope to listen to joint sounds?
You could. And look, some colleagues like to. There are some interesting stethoscopes. There's one, in fact, you can get, which actually can apply on both joints at the same time. I have to say, in my experience, the value of using a stethoscope, I'm not sure, enhances your ability to better treat them. But again, you know, some colleagues like to treat their patients where they actually want to know absolutely everything. And of course, with a stethoscope, you're going to hear exceptionally subtle noises.
So, Michael, let's say that a patient is planning to have some restorative treatment, some extensive restorative treatment with us, and has joint sounds, whether it be clicking, clunking, popping, or otherwise. Are there cautions that we should be aware of prior to commencing treatment on them, whether it's simple restorative or crown and bridge?
Yeah, look, I think the first thing is understand the beast you're dealing with. That means the TMJ, by the way. So appreciating, for example, are the masseters hypertrophic? Is there evidence that the patient actually has pain both in the TMJ muscles or both? And with the clicking too, understanding the stages of the clicking. Is it just simply when they're late stage opening their mouth, or is it bilaterally in both joints? Is it actually early stage and late stage opening? And the relevancy is when you start to change or have an impact, particularly if you're talking about multiple units of teeth you're restoring, changing the occlusal vertical dimension may have an impact on the patient's TMJ and masticatory muscle complex. We know that for most patients we'll do restorations and literally there's no issue. But it's those patients that you get where there seems to be like a threshold where you start to change the occlusion restoratively and all of a sudden they tip through that threshold and they start to experience symptoms. And I'm sure quite a lot of colleagues listening to this podcast might actually think of one or two cases that they've done where surprisingly all they've done is a simple restoration and suddenly you're dealing with a patient who's got incredible pain both in their jaw and their facial region.
Mike, I know there's a lot more we need to discuss about this and how it applies to general practice, and especially restorative treatments, the management of TMJ issues, both before we plan a treatment program and how these assessments impact the decision on splint therapies to maintain TMJ stability, to protect our restorative treatment from parafunctional forces. Would you care to comment on changing centric occlusion, as you've alluded to, and vertical dimension in restorative treatment planning? Would you do splint therapy before? Would you do splint therapy after? Would you provisionalize to test the new vertical dimension? Some comments about how wide we can open someone before we start to step into trouble with TMJs.
Yeah, well, look, that's a great question. It's almost like the Holy Chalice there, because when you start restoring a patient, particularly, again, multiple units, and particularly if you're changing the occlusion, you're dealing with a patient with a significantly worn dentition, the first thing I'd advocate is making a splint, in my opinion, with the perceived or determined new vertical dimension that you want, because it's very simple to actually have a patient wearing that splint, and if they find they start to get pain in the musculature, joints or both, you know then that the height that you're anticipating to lengthen those teeth in what would be considered perhaps an ideal occlusion, an ideal aesthetic presentation of their dentition, might not be quite appropriate for that patient. You know, one of the things I've experienced, and I know quite a few colleagues, I'm sure even again listening to this podcast would have, is with all the best of intentions, you've done some very nice conservative work, the work looks fabulous, but the patient just is complaining constantly of chronic pain. So having a removable splint as a guide to tolerance of the vertical dimension, I think is terrific. Also, we know, you know, with these splints, you can adjust them. So if you are doing multiple units, as you're doing the treatment, if the patient's already got the splint, you can actually maintain the efficacy of that device and adjust the splint according to the number of units you're treating at the time.
So once you've established the vertical dimension that the patient is comfortable with, in a range, I guess, from probably 1 to up to 10 millimetres, the splint confirms the patient's comfort with that change. And I guess as we use the patient when they're coming in for the restorative procedure, wears the splint for around a half an hour before they arrive to deprogram the muscles so that the opening is more comfortable for them and the procedure is also more comfortable for them as well. Is that the extension of what you're saying with splint therapy, Michael?
Yeah, but also I think we know that when you're having multiple dental visits done, especially multiple teeth treated, the mouth's going to be open for a long time, isn't it? So you've got a patient who may potentially just develop pain and discomfort from that procedure itself, having the mouth open for a prolonged period. But I also would suggest to you, and this is just my opinion, but I would advocate that if you are going to change the occlusion, certainly 3 millimetres, 5 or 10, as you mentioned, the advice I'd have is considering maybe wearing the splint as much as they can during the day as well, so that they actually get a much more sustained impact on their jaw mechanism than just wearing it at night time.
Excellent, excellent ideas there, Michael. So I look forward to discussing with you in the next podcast the importance of a thorough TMJ muscle analysis prior to changes in occlusion, as it relates to single or multiple restorative treatments. And I guess the best part is that we've got lots of podcasts to come and plenty of opportunity to overview these issues. So thanks for listening, and remember to drop in to www.onlinedentalmentoring.com. Leave your Q&As there for us to address on a alternate podcast basis. And it's bye from me.
And it's bye from me.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and invite you to visit onlinedentalmentoring.com to subscribe to access more free podcasts in our video library and also be able to submit your questions for our panel discussion podcasts. And remember, tell your colleagues about us if you feel they'd benefit from the information that we've presented. Until next podcast, take care.